This is Yehudah HaKohen, Vision Movement, Vision Magazine, and you are listening to the Next Stage Podcast. Moadim L'Simcha, Chagim Uzmanim L'Sason, Chag Sameach. Tonight is the seventh night of Pesach, a festival, and it appears that many Jews who celebrate the 21st of Nisan, the seventh of Pesach, what we call in Israel Shvi'i Shel Pesach, are completely unaware of what we're actually celebrating. What do the people of Israel celebrate on the 21st night of the month of Nisan, on the 7th of Pesach? So I've decided that for this episode of the Next Stage Podcast, I would share the story of Shvi'i Shel Pesach, the 7th of Pesach, and what it is that we're actually commemorating tonight and tomorrow. As always, listeners are encouraged to join our Patreon community at patreon.com/visionmovement, where you can not only support the show, but gain access to exclusive content. And if that's not something that's realistic for you at the moment, you can still help support our efforts and spread our message by giving us a positive rating and review, and sharing this podcast with your friends. And the truth is, I think this is definitely a good podcast to share, being as so many Jews could benefit from a deeper understanding of what it is we actually celebrate on the 7th of Pesach, which is, of course, also the 21st of Nisan. And if anyone is interested in checking out the show notes of this episode, you can go to visionmag.org/thenextstage. 121. As the children of Israel left Egypt, Hashem sent a pillar of cloud to guide us by day and a pillar of fire to lead us by night. For 3 days we traveled from Ramses to Sukkot to Eitam to Pi HaChirot, which translates literally into English as the mouth of freedom. This constant day and night movement without rest reflects the nation's accelerated transformation. Then Hashem told Moshe to keep Israel in place in order to lure Paro and the Egyptian military after them. In Shmot 14 verse 4, we see Hashem telling Moshe that he would again stiffen Paro's heart and cause the Egyptian army to chase after the Hebrews in an attempt to recover the kingdom's slaves. A final confrontation was necessary not only to psychologically separate Israel from Egypt definitively, but also to sufficiently intimidate Egypt so that the empire wouldn't intervene on behalf of its Canaanite vassal states during Israel's eventual conquest of the Promised Land. Shmot 14 verse 6 shows us the extent of Paro's exceptional leadership qualities. Despite everything that had happened to Egypt over the last year, the king was able to galvanize and inspire his army after him in pursuit of Israel. When the Hebrews saw the 600 Egyptian chariots approaching, they cried out to Hashem. But these cries quickly transformed into complaints to Moshe. Israel was caught between the Egyptian military and the Sea of Reeds, and in verse 12, the former slaves expressed a preference for returning to their former masters rather than be killed in the wilderness. The Ibn Ezra points out here that the Hebrews greatly outnumbered the Egyptian forces, and he asks why Israel was so frightened. He asks, how could a camp of 600,000 men fear their pursuers? Why should they not fight for their lives and the lives of their children? The answer is that the Egyptians had been Israel's masters. The generation leaving Egypt had learned from childhood to endure the Egyptian yoke, and they possessed a low soul. Being weak and unaccustomed to warfare, how could they now fight against their masters? The Ibn Ezra further teaches that the Creator would arrange for all the males who had left Egypt to die out over 40 years in the desert because they had lacked the inner strength to fight a war of liberation. A new generation, unencumbered by this low soul, needed to rise up before Israel could enter the land. This experience of impending mortal danger and the ultimate deliverance that would follow became an essential part of Israel's re-education. Because Moshe, unlike the nation, was convinced that Hashem would save them, he told the people to stand back and watch what would take place. But then in verse 15, we see Hashem tell Moshe explicitly that Israel must take action and move forward into the sea. This would be a key moment in Israel's psychological liberation. But because the Creator wanted Israel to trust Moshe's leadership, he instructed him to lift his staff over the sea to make it appear as if Moshe was causing it to split. The pillar of cloud and pillar of fire then joined together between the Hebrew and Egyptian camps in order to provide light for Israel and enshroud the Egyptians in darkness. Like the previous 10 plagues, this event would have a far more profound impact on Egypt than on Israel. The Egyptian warriors would experience an intense paradigm shift and recognize the power of the Hebrew God, even if only at their final moments before death. Israel was still at this point so deeply psychologically enslaved that they saw the world and themselves through the eyes of their former masters, and they were only able to perceive Hashem's power through Egypt's recognition of it. Our sages teach that Nachshon ben Aminadav, a chief of the Yehuda tribe, was the first to enter the sea and that the sea only parted once the water reached his face. This shows that certain Hebrews were already starting to free themselves from their former passivity. Shmot 14 verse 21 states that Moshe stretched out his hand over the sea and Hashem moved the sea with the strong east wind all night, and he turned the sea to damp land and the water split. And the next verse states that the children of Israel went into the sea on dry land and the water was a wall for them on their right and on their left. Manitou points out that this description of events presents us with a certain duality. Stating that Hashem drove the sea back with a strong east wind might have made it seem like a natural event. But the waters forming a wall on either side of the Hebrews seems clearly miraculous. This reflects two different perceptions within Israel of the same experience. Some of the Hebrews had perceived the event as merely the wind blowing the sea, while others experienced what was happening as undeniably miraculous and supernatural. Such different assessments of the same events is actually common, because the Creator runs the world in such a way that we can perceive events as either natural or miraculous depending on our own perceptions of reality. We can choose to see the world through a lens that makes nothing a miracle, or we can choose to perceive reality in such a way that makes everything miraculous. The choice is really ours. Our sages teach that while crossing the sea, one Hebrew even complained to another about the mud on his feet. But once arriving on the other side, the entire nation had a collective prophetic experience. The Egyptians had pursued them into the sea and were ultimately drowned. Seeing the Egyptian military completely destroyed, the Hebrews suddenly burst into prophetic song. The Mechilta teaches that even the handmaid saw on the seashore what Yechezkel ben Buzi and other prophets didn't see. The children of Israel temporarily rose to a level of prophecy where they all understood Ma'aseh Merkava, the content of Yechezkel's vision. This experience of collective nevuah, like a lightning flash in the dark, took place on the night of the 21st of Nisan, the Shvi'i Shel Pesach, and marked the culmination of the Exodus. And it became a festival on the Hebrew calendar for all time. This collective experience of temporarily seeing behind many of creation's veils and gaining insight into Hashem's divine plan was imprinted on Israel's collective consciousness for all time. Even when later subjugated by foreign nations or by our own transgressions, the imprint of this momentary prophetic experience on our national soul provides us with the inner strength to break our chains. It didn't eliminate the potential for failure, but that seven-day formative Exodus experience endowed Israel with eternal resilience. Although future generations might stumble and fall, we would always have the ability to rediscover our true collective self and rise up. But despite all this, the splitting of the sea and destruction of the Egyptian armed forces was actually a much more significant event for the international community than it was for Israel. Despite the fact that it was a momentary experience of collective national prophecy and marked the final psychological separation of Israel from Egypt, the Hebrews very quickly resorted to narrow thinking and complaints. But from the perspective of other peoples and civilizations of the time, the shattering of Egyptian economic, military, and ideological power was a monumental event of international significance. When the Creator intervened in history and destroyed Israel's enemies, this left a major impression on the world. Israel's prophetic song at the sea actually emphasizes this when addressing the reactions of various nations to the event. And even 40 years later, when two Hebrew spies would enter the city of Jericho, we see in Joshua 2 verses 9 through 11 that the people were in fear of Israel due to what had happened to the Egyptians at the sea. But Israel, by contrast, despite the prophetic experience that made a lasting imprint on our soul, does not appear to have gone through any surface-level transformation of consciousness.